Little known fact, Mary and Joseph had Jesus in the America room at Shroot Farms.
The three wise men were Mose, Zeke,
and Jeb.
Yeah, and Jeb.
Out of paper, out of stock, there's friendly faces around the block. Break loose from the chains that are causing you pain. Call Michael and Stanley, Jim Dwight Creed, call Andy and Kelly, for your business paper needs, or Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people, Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people, Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people.
Hello and welcome to the Michael Scott Podcast Company, aka the GDMSPC, a show for fans of The Office by fans of The Office. I'm your host and a fickle pickle salesman who will tickle you for a nickel, Sean Roney.
And I'm Edwin James Dwight Jr.
And with us, as always, our producer in the warehouse, Mr. Alex Ward.
Excuse me, I have to run to my car to take a dump.
Yes, that is the perfect drop. Every week we get together and talk about our favorite show, NBC's The Office. This week we have our main topic, and then we'll do a conference room at the end. We'll do a year in review, our Christmas watch list, maybe just our recommendations for you to things to watch or listen to during this winter break. And then we'll do some listener trivia as usual. This week, my opening question to you gentlemen, look back on your year and answer me honestly. Have you been impish or admirable? Because this week, we're talking about Dwight Christmas.
I've been a little impish, not going to lie. Been playing too many video games over the pandemic.
Oh, boy.
I think admirable.
And I'd say somewhere in the middle. Dwight Christmas, season 9, episode 9.
Nine.
air date was December 6, 2012. It was written by Robert Padnick and directed by Charles McDougall. This is the season 9 Christmas episode, and we've done only one Christmas episode. What did we talk about last year? Was it Benihana Christmas?
I think we did two.
I think we did two. That's right.
I think we did one about Christmas Party in season 2, one about Benihana Christmas.
Yes.
So you can go back and listen to those if you haven't heard them.
And I think on one hand, this gives us a chance to talk about season 9 because we're a little bit further away from it in terms of our seasonal recaps. But also, interestingly enough, this was going to be a concept for the season 4 Christmas episode, which that season got kind of truncated and adjusted because of the writer's strike. And they always wanted to do this idea, and they brought it back in season 9. So
we're going in order.
I know. Can you imagine this?
Yeah, when Michael was there, season 4? Oh, man.
And then a lot of the Christmases after that were the plot was too intertwined into the Christmas episode to do Dwight Christmas. So this was the perfect...
Well, we'll get into it, but I think there's a lot of plot intertwined to this episode, and it's a little... Ugh. But, you know. This is still a season 9 episode, okay? Even though it's a Christmas episode, all right? And we're not going to give it a break, okay?
I know, you're not going to let us forget.
But you know, tis the season. It's a Christmas episode.
I know we did a Patreon episode in your new place, first public episode in your new place, is it not?
This is my first episode in the new place. Congrats, so if I sound funny, I am in a cement box underground right now.
Weird.
There's no furniture in here. I think that'll help once I get some.
Did you figure out what to do with that clown painting that was integral to the structural integrity of the building?
Apparently, it does not come off.
But
if I ever do get it off, I'll sell it at a garage sale.
I wish I thought I had really tried to get you that as a housewarming present that same painting.
That would have been a funny joke, but then I
you'd have to just know what to do
with the clown painting.
You know, one thing that is kind of funny for the listeners is when Sean showed us the house, like on Zillow, we got to see photos of it. One of the bedrooms had a Threat Level Midnight poster on the wall.
Oh yeah,
that's so true. Oh my gosh, I totally forgot about that. You're right.
That's the sign it's meant to be.
So. We'll just start with the cold open. So I'll say this: when I started watching this show, this episode again today, for a second I thought this was going to be the Jim bites his lip cold open, because he's doing so much like weird lip stuff at the beginning. So if you go back and watch it, maybe you'll know what I'm talking
about. Well, he's debating which shirt to wear.
Right. But he's like chewing on his lip the whole time. Anyway, so he's debating what shirt to wear, because he's going to go to Philadelphia. He's going to have his first day finally at Athlete, which is, he and Pam have been debating and she is letting him go.
He is trying to get to Philadelphia.
I'm a Philly dirty town.
That's just gonna be a great
speaking
drop.
Of cold open speaking of cold open, I didn't get a theme song when I watched it on Netflix today.
I don't think I did either. Now that you
they just played the opening credits.
Is that so?
Oh, interesting.
I didn't even notice.
I wonder if it has anything to do with the show leaving for Peacock very soon.
Well, the one right before it, the episode right before it is The Target, and it had the theme credits.
You'd think they would leave it in put it in to have some time to make up for the short Black Peter scenes they've cut.
It makes me wonder.
Yes, yeah, we'll talk about that.
I was trying to figure it out. I didn't get too far in this research thread, but like what else aired that day, and like what if it was some sort of scheduling programming thing that caused. And then not have the theme song, but I just didn't see it when I watched on Netflix today.
Yeah.
Like they just started playing the credits, and I thought to myself, that's strange. Like they normally don't do that until after the theme song, but not even a short open where, sometimes it's very short and it's very truncated, but yeah.
Sure. Yeah, that's a good call. Well, anyway.
So we get Jim debating whether or not his shirt is too blue. Pam can't really answer him. Dwight steps in and says, yes, it's too blue. It makes your head look like a mop or your neck look like a mop handle. This isn't a very funny cold open. I mean, I don't know if everyone agrees with that, but in my opinion, it's not. But it establishes for the episode that Jim, Pam, and Dwight have become this tiny little family.
I think it also establishes that Jim really cares about this. That's coming up. The fact that he's being neurotic about his color of shirt, which is very unlike Jim, establishes that like this party happening and everything going on in their lives. Like Jim really, really, really gives a crap about this thing. And then it plays out for the episode for plot later.
Yeah, you compare that with the way that he dresses in the first few seasons, how comfortable he is wearing a tuxedo in the new boss episode to now, overthinking about which color shirt to wear.
I immediately think when he talks about Dwight's like, you look like a mop handle. And Pam kind of gives Jim a look like
the nod.
He's not wrong. But I immediately thought of Fantasia, the mops coming to life and carrying the water around.
Oh my God.
And then I thought of Jim like as a mop person from that scene in the movie.
But this is setting the stage for what happens later in the episode that we'll see between Jim, Pam, and Dwight, really, that Pam and Dwight are upset that Jim is leaving, is essentially where this is going. And just as an overview of the episode, like, I gotta say, and I think this is a problem with season 9 overall, it's, like, exhausting. When I was, like, looking at all the storylines or characters that we need to talk about in this episode, it's an exhausting list. Like you've got Jim with going to Philly and, betraying Dwight and Pam, and Dwight with his Belschnickel and his family history, Daryl being upset that Jim hasn't asked him to come to Philly yet. You got Andy still being a douche. He's out at sea
over email.
There's the whole Aaron and Pete story. There's the whole Toby and Nelly story. There's the whole Angela and Oscar story. It is like, oh my God.
Just give me an episode where they drug test everyone. Keep it simple.
I just want some Christmas karaoke from Creed.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned all this because I was trying to... The thing I mentioned about Greg Daniels talking about the Belschnickel idea initially being in season 4, I was trying to find that in the Andy Green book. So I went back and I read the chapter on season 9 looking for it. And one thing that came across in that chapter is how they were all kind of a little bit at the end of the line, like in terms of coming up with new stories, there was just a little bit of fatigue in the writer's room, I think, with trying to come up with new stuff. Is the show going to come back? And, you know, they used Catherine Tate, Nelly, as an example of, they have this person who's very talented, well-known in England, who comes to the U.S. and like, they're trying to find room for her in the ensemble. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a quote from one of the writers who was like, who said something like, let's come up with a G storyline for Nelly. And it's like a G storyline, like how fractured is the story? They want to honor everyone in the ensemble and give them something to do. But at the same time, you know, if you try to go back to too many small storylines, you end up circling or feeling like you're repeating what you did in the early season. So they had a big challenge. And I think you can really see it in this episode.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think that storyline only gets two scenes in this episode. Like the first time when he's talking about it and everyone leaves and Nellie's like, oh, tell me more. And then it goes to the end when she's shushing him.
Well, then they have a couple of cut-ins, and they always are there in the background when we see Aaron and Pete in the annex. They're still talking, but then we cut to the end where they kiss. And by the way, I was telling these guys, you know, I was like, I don't know if I've ever really seen this episode like just sat through the whole thing, because this is about at this point in season 9 that I can barely stand.
Yes.
And sitting through it today, I genuinely don't know if I've ever watched that final scene with Nelly and Toby. And it is so uncomfortable.
Isn't it? Oh, yeah. Question. Here's an off the cuff. Would you rather? Would you rather just sitting you and the other person in a room? Would you rather sit there and have Pete do the entirety of Die Hard? Or would you rather have Toby tell you all about the trial of the Scranton Strangler?
Die Hard is not playing.
Die Hard is not. It's Pete doing every line or Toby telling you the entire jury process.
I think I'm still going to take the jury study. Me too.
Yeah.
Me too.
Just because we don't know what happened.
It did make me think of when I had jury duty. I was on a jury for 5 days. And it was a painful experience, and one that I think about often still. But anytime anyone asks me about it and I start talking about it, I can see their interest like slowly dwindle as I start to just launch into the whole thing.
But you got to eat those.
Would be interesting.
You got to get those good empanadas from Ernesto's, right?
Right.
Here's the thing about Moonlight. It's not sunlight.
I like little clues like that where you're like, oh, you're starting to just see shreds of what this actual case was. And it's like, all right, so some kill happened at night and someone saw it, but the moon.
Yeah.
There's another kind of throwaway line when Toby is talking and he says something like, it was 2 nickels and maybe a dime, not quite a quarter. Like, what could that possibly be about?
Someone had pocket change that didn't make sense. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So funny.
It is. It's those nauseating details. Yeah. Like if you actually are on a jury, like you will find those little details to be so, those are so important to the story, but to everyone else, it's so boring.
You know, the last time I got summoned for jury duty, not to keep us on this topic forever.
People start turning off this episode.
It was the day before Thanksgiving, and I was kind of concerned, like, how is this going to work? And halfway through the day, I didn't even have to wait through the whole day. They just announced they're not going to take any new cases today. You can all go home and enjoy your holiday, and you're done for at least 2 years. I was like, well, that's about as good as it could have possibly been.
Yeah.
I had a very similar experience with, yeah, with summons.
Well, or the worst it can go is you're on a week-long sexual assault case. But let's go. Let's move on. So of course, the highlight of this episode is that it's Dwight Christmas. It's the Belschnickel Pennsylvania Dutch Christmas.
It's the Belschnickel of the ball.
Yeah, and just as Oscar says, it's a real thing. Mm-hmm.
Oh, now you believe it because some Democrat looked it up on Wikipedia?
Which, by the way, if you go on Wikipedia, it's exactly what Oscar says.
I love just the little Democrat comment. It's so funny. Yeah. I don't know why that makes me laugh that it's Oscar. It's good. But it's true. I mean, he describes the whole thing, and you are like, no way. And it's all true.
Mm-hmm.
All true. I went on Wikipedia and I looked it up.
Yeah.
No doubt.
I think too, this is the moment where they allude to the scene that got cut from Netflix and over this past summer. Which is after Oscar reads that scene, or he reads the description on Wikipedia, Dwight pulls back into the conference room and pulls out his phone to text. In the scene that has now been cut, he texts Nate, who is wearing blackface, as Belschnickel's companion. Right. And he turns around and walks away. He doesn't have any speaking lines, but they cut that scene from the episode. And Greg Daniels issued a statement about apologizing for it. We do see Nate wearing some of the makeup still.
Yeah, well, and I think as a late 2020 episode, like, I think this is, about this year, you know, what happened earlier was, you know, with the Black Lives Matter movement, a lot of shows. Wait,
do you mean
the
poisonous smoke, or do you mean the pandemic, or do you mean murder hornets, yeah, or do you mean economic uncertainty?
But this was a thing in 2020 that, you know, a lot of shows were like, you know what, you're right, that's not funny, we're going to just get rid of that. So 30 Rock had a similar thing, right? Where Jenna's in blackface, they remove. I think they've cut that from the streaming services. Maybe they didn't, but I know Tina Fey asked for it, and they cut this quick little cutaway to Nate in the parking lot. But they do leave him later in the episode. You can see that he's wiped it all off because we see Dwight, like, do the text someone, and we don't know what that was going to. So that's a really, like, complicated, that's a very tough joke to piece together without that.
This is the first time I've watched this episode since I knew that they cut that scene. Mm-hmm. And I actually thought it totally worked. Like, it's definitely a lot more subtle, but if you're paying attention, it actually, I thought the joke landed better in some ways without it, because you just see him do that text and you're like, oh, he's clearly texting someone.
Right.
To not, like, it makes sense the way his body language, the way he texts. And then seeing Nate later with just a twinge of makeup and some of the on there, you're like, then it's funny in that moment. You're like, oh, he was going to have Nate come in like that. So I thought it still worked, actually. I was kind of surprised by how well it did.
It's very, very similar to in season 7's costume contest where Michael dresses up as Daryl and people have caught that there's like two finger smudges on the back of Michael's neck.
Right.
And the point is that the fact that Michael started and decided it was a bad idea and stopped is funnier than him actually doing it. Like,
and that proves that I feel like seeing Nate with it wiped off is... that was the intention of that earlier joke with Michael.
And I know some people are like, cutting the scene, why, whatever, it's comedy. And, you know, honestly, after seeing it, where it's like, you don't even need it. It doesn't totally matter. It didn't ruin the episode. Totally fine.
I think that's the point of all that is it's offensive and you don't need it. So it's, but anyways, moving on. I think actually one of the weird, if we're just talking about tasteless humor in this episode too, it's like, it's that weird joke with, like, so Dumatril, right, is like revealed as like a antidepressant that Nellie's been taking earlier in the season.
Yeah, it's in Here Comes Trouble.
So in this episode, I don't know if you guys, y'all picked up on this joke because I've never heard it before. But like Dwight says, like, Pam offers him like punch or something. And he's like, no,
I think.
Yeah, he's like, no, I'm just going to take another Dumatril. Like, Jim taught me about this cool way to take it where you grind it up and snort it up your butt. And I was just like, what? It's a weird office joke.
It's a weird joke.
Dwight's hooked on antidepressants and he's snorting them up his butt. This is like, that's so weird and such a dark prank for Jim to pull.
To be fair, that is a traditional Pennsylvania Dutch Christmas move that you do. I agree. It's not for everyone.
It is interesting that that's, I think, the only other time they allude to it, because at the end of Here Comes Trouble, it's kind of, Nelly kind of suggests it to Dwight, because Dwight has so much going on in his life that he's managing and looking after. And some people online have kind of asked, does this explain why Dwight acts the way he does in season 9?
Right, yeah,
which is an interesting kind of thing to consider. But I also kind of think this is an example of where the writers had so many stories going on that they just abandoned this one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, it is funny that he mentions it again. And I have a hard, I mean, I get why they would bring that in or give that to Dwight, because Dwight is so intense and focused and worried about everything. But there's a line where Michael in Stress Relief says, "Do I stress you out?" And Dwight says, "Nothing stresses me out." Which is like, that's pure Dwight right there.
Mm-hmm.
I want to talk real quick, though, about why they're having this in the first place, right? Why they throw this party is, and it's an odd way to get into this party, which is essentially Aaron looking at the office calendar and being like, "Oh, the Christmas party's today," and then no one realizes it, and they show some Thanksgiving decorations that are still up. I guess to imply that no one's thought about actually doing this because everyone else has been focused on other things in their life, right?
To tell you the truth, it bugged me a little bit that when Pam pitches the idea to the party planning committee, they discuss the whole thing and they go back out to present to the rest of the staff what they're going to do. And there are no Christmas decorations anywhere in the office. It just seemed like that doesn't really compute with the way they've handled Christmas and all these other holidays to not have anything up. Well, it just seemed out of place to me.
Yeah. There's that little cutaway to the turkey when Nellie's like,
Yeah,
Nelly's like, "Really?" And there's just a cutaway to the turkey, they haven't changed anything. I think it alludes to just how they have too many things going on in this season.
Yeah.
It feels like it was a conversation in the writer's room where they got to a certain point and they're like, "Oh yeah, we have to do a Christmas episode." "Really? Already?" Yeah.
It's almost, and then they just wrote that into the episode. They're like, "What if they did what we did?"
even the dialogue between Jim and Pam, where they're in the conference room giving a talking head, and Jim says, "Was it what you expected?" And Pam says, "Dwight is holding a candle and reading a poem." They rush to it, which is funny, but it does kind of detract from the point that like it's not a Christmas episode as The Office has established.
Right. Yeah, but I do like when Dwight sort of pitches the idea. Jim is immediately enthusiastic because Jim loves to bring Dwight's personal traditions and life into the office as much as he can to ridicule him about it. And Jim brings a great trivia team name when he's like, "Am I the only one who wants to try Hufflepuffs and Schnauzerhosen and meet this Glenn Pickle guy?" I think a trivia name of this Glenn Pickle guy is a super deep cut. That's
good.
You know, it's funny. We've been kind of critical of this episode so far, but there is a ton of funny stuff. I love the Belschnickel of it all. But it does seem to live at this tension point between Jim wanting to leave the office, Dwight being very upset about that, and all of the characters kind of being caught in the middle of that.
And also, Erin is just out of, I mean, she's in character, but she's not her usual self.
No,
she's dealing with Andy being a dick and also Pete trying to show her that he knows all of Die Hard. It's just a strange thing for her. And like I always count on Aaron to just bring this jovial silliness and moments of brightness. And she's not even there to do that for this episode too.
That is exactly the note that I made watching it, was just that, like, I want Aaron, like, who is this? Like, there's a part where Pete and Kevin are back and forth quoting Die Hard, and she's just like, "I don't know what any of this means." And it's like, that's so not Aaron. That's not what she would say. It's just very like, and maybe it's one of these things where it's like, well, she's grown since like we first met her and all these things, but it's just like, well, it's not funny. It would be nice if so, you know.
Yeah.
The storyline is not very funny.
it might have been funnier in that moment and more true to Erin if she said something like, I don't get it. Like she's trying
exactly.
to, she's That's... trying to play along. She's trying to be part of the group.
Yeah. She's like, I don't know what this is. What?
Yeah, exactly. And then the next scene of that is her like with the script up correcting Pete, which also feels really weird that she wouldn't just be sitting there watching Pete doing it and like loving it.
Exactly.
And obviously we're not trying to be like, oh, Erin should be this way or anything, because she's thinking about Andy and how much of a dick he's being. So she's obviously distracted, but still, it's like
we've watched Erin like flirt with someone else while she's dating someone else before, because she was dating Gabe on that one Valentine's Day when she's like flirting with Andy the whole time. And that was funny. So this is like, what happened?
What happened? It's a weird thing, but it's just establishing their relationship so they can Pete can take over from Andy. But I do like the scene though, with, you mentioned with Kevin and Pete, that's a great little scene where they're doing the lines, and then he corrects Kevin of when the yippee-ki-yay line is, and Kevin is just distraught and he has to leave. He's like, it's okay. Kevin is like, it's not okay.
That's like when people correct us.
That's what it feels like. That's exactly what it feels like. No, it's not okay. I have to leave. Oh, that's true. That's true. Let's get back to the actual Christmas part of this episode. Cause Dwight, who is overjoyed that this is happening and says that, you know, his grandpa was an okay Belschnickel, but Dwight is great at it. Right. And he brings a lot of pride and his Pennsylvania Dutch roots to the office here. And
born to be Belschnickel.
It's kind of incredible how much equipment he already had ready for this, despite not knowing it was going to happen. All the bowls, all the outfit.
The set of rubber gaskets for canning jars.
I know. All the presents he gives everyone. The burlap
sack. He's got a toilet in his car.
Yeah, that trumpet that he blows. He's got it all. So luckily Dwight's there to save Christmas. He's got a whole thing of glue vine. He's got a hog maw. He's ready to go.
Hog mama. Yeah.
I love this hog mama.
You mentioned the candle reading scene, which is strange. That's all just a setup for him to dress up like Belschnickel. Again, you're right. It never feels like a Christmas episode. And then it's like Phyllis comes through and saves the day. And she's like, I found a bunch of decorations in the warehouse.
Yeah.
And then it finally feels like a Christmas episode.
Where are the sugar cookies? Where's the karaoke machine? As Meredith says.
Yeah.
Kevin dressing up as Santa feels like a rightful, thing that hasn't happened in any other Christmas episode.
Yeah, I know. It's they graze right over that.
I love when he carries Angela off the table. I thought that was such a funny scene.
And then later she's sitting on his lap and they're talking about, they're having a, I don't know, happy conversation.
It reminds me of when Erin jumps on Stanley's back in the lice episode, where it's just very small person is on this very big person.
Always good. Meredith strapped to Kevin. And
I was just going to say that.
I love when Meredith says, hey, Belschnickel, I've been real ambitious too.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, yeah.
I know. She goes up against the wall.
Yeah. Oh, that's okay. Yeah, let's talk about when Dwight is like whipping people with with his like, I don't know, it's like a bunch of straw or something like that. Mm-hmm. But
chimney broom is what it looks like.
He only hits two people, right? He hits Oscar, and it's this is where I want to talk about, like, compare season 9 to earlier seasons. So he says, like, have you been, what does he say? Like, cheer or fear?
Belschnickel is near.
Belschnickel's here. And, like, you have been, and he pauses, and then he, like, looks over at Angela, and then looks over at Oscar, and goes, impish, and smacks him, right? And I'm just like, I'm thinking, like, why is this so cheesy? Like, why does it feel so cheesy? Like, if this had happened in season 2, I feel like he would have hit him. And then after that, people would be like, why'd you do that? And, like, it'd, like, cut away to him looking at Angela. Does that make sense?
Well, we're not in season two anymore, though.
I know. That's what I'm saying, rules, though. But I'm just pointing out, like, sorry, this is just like a really minor thing that I was like, the way they did that is so cartoonish.
Yeah.
Compared to like the real drama that they used to create. Anyway, so okay, that's the first time. And then he hits Jim a bunch. And Jim is like such a baby about it. Jim is really annoying in this episode.
It's like it's the same way he reacts getting hit with snowballs.
Yeah. Ow, ow, what the hell? And then he's like, and then he's just like, he's like, that's enough. I'm done. Okay. Like he like announces it to the whole room. It's just like, just walk away, man.
You think like he should just allow Dwight to just hit him with the,
yeah.
He could just like, he could just walk away.
I think one thing that might've been a factor in that scene is there's a blooper of Rainn Wilson hitting John Krasinski and him, oh, what the hell? And they all break. Like they had, I think they had a hard time getting that scene.
All right. I figure.
I will say that's like my favorite scene of this episode is the Belshnickel of it all and him giving out the gifts to everyone. I think that's just so funny and silly. It's but yeah, it's just, I don't know. This is a very different Christmas episode from the rest of them.
Yes.
I wish we had gotten Belshnickel in season four
with
Michael. Mm. And yeah, I think this version of Dwight.
Who would have been Black Peter in season four? There's no Nate.
He would have tried to get Ryan to do it, and Ryan would say no.
Yeah, come on.
or Michael would just show up with the two fingerprints on his neck.
I like Ryan would like open the box that Dwight gave him and just be like, "Oh no,
yeah.
It'd be Mose.
Yeah, it would probably
be. You're right.
Mose.
It would be Mose. Yeah. You're right. 100% right. Yes, and throughout this time, we're getting. Speaking of Jim, we're also getting Daryl just getting drunk and starting to build pressure like a time bomb where he's just, and he says it pretty early on. He's like, hey, look, Jim mentioned he was going to take me to Philly. Hasn't said anything in months. And I'm going to get really drunk and confront him is essentially his thing. Along the way, we see him chugging straight out of the punch bowl. He's getting cartoonishly drunk. Craig Robinson really overselling being drunk a little bit in this episode, I thought.
Meredith's kind of cute.
Yeah, he contracts the Meredith virus, which is like, he's just drinking up.
Wait, I love that he says, Meredith's kind of cute. She's kind of got an Emma Stone thing going on.
I'm just realizing.
And then it immediately cuts to him like doing like a dance move in front of her and then pointing at her. And then she does a dance move and he just goes, boom.
It's just like, so. And then right after that scene is Pam and Dwight. They kind of have a sweet moment where they're both unhappy sitting at the desk talking about it. And Pam's like, for what it's worth, I thought your party was better. And Dwight says, everyone thought the food was gross and that Belshnickel was some darkly erotic freak. I don't think anyone thought that.
So self-aware.
Darkly erotic freak. Anyway,
I will say when Jim does come back, he kind of validates what they're all doing. He validates the Christmas party. He validates them being there. Like, I mean, if the tension is that Jim is abandoning his wife and his old workplace for this new thing, the fact that he comes back kind of is like a heartwarming moment for the episode. And I love when Daryl dances up to him.
Yes.
And Jim is just like, oh, before I forget again, they want to bring you in for an interview. And Daryl spins around and falls backwards into that table. One of my favorite physical moments of comedy in the whole show.
It is a 10 out of 10 pratfall. It's so good. It's the way the table breaks, the perfect spread eagle. It's awesome.
I just want to say too that, like, you know, from a production standpoint, like the special effect of and stunt, right? So these are separate things. Like there's like the stunt of like the actor spinning and falling, and then there's the special effect of the table breaking and breaking again.
Yes.
Which is it's very good slapstick physical comedy. It's great.
It was extremely well executed.
The bowl
of eggnog. It's
that moment and the Meredith moment with the earlier conference room meeting any moment where the rest of the staff just goes, oh, like they were, they groan collectively, is always a funny moment.
Yeah.
I will say, too, this is another moment where Jim is just so unrelatable in this episode. He does not detect Daryl's anger, and everybody else in the room does.
I mean, yeah, he's been getting drunk in his office alone is what it seems like.
He has been. He has the bowl. He's slurping from the bowl like right. you do, like yeah. a soup.
The way he walks into the conference room. Yeah, I couldn't tell if he's just... is drunk strutting or if he's kind of dancing while he's about
he's
to confront
kind
Jim.
Of dance.
But he's
also like, yeah.
But the way he says, you, seems like he's about to challenge him to a dance off.
He does.
Like, you, turn, we're doing this.
He does kind of dance walk up to him.
Yeah. But of course, Jim comes back, a super sappy romantic thing. Like, no, I just missed my wife. After Pam's like, oh, what happened? You miss your bus? Jim's plan being to get to Philly and have a whole night in the hotel to sleep and go to the meeting when he realizes, I'll go to this party and I'll leave in the morning. And yeah. you're right that like when he comes back, like Dwight beats Pam to hug Jim, you know, like it's almost like Jim's presence. Like Jim is someone who doesn't take anything seriously. And the fact that he came back for the party and is like, where's Belschnickel? What's going on? It really validates the whole party for everyone. It validates Dwight a lot. And then for Pam, she's just like glad that, you know, he's going to be there that night before he goes to Philly. And he gets a chance to talk to Daryl again. So this whole thing kind of, it's like this house of cards built on like Jim being reliable, which is, it doesn't, yeah, it just doesn't feel totally right a lot of the time in the episode.
I mean, I think that's one thing that happens a lot in season 9, whether on purpose or not, is these moments that, in the rest of the show, Jim coming back like that would be the surprise and the nice moment. And sometimes it doesn't always feel right. Like, I think, for example, later on in the season when Jim gives Pam that drawing and she's just like, oh, I didn't realize you kept this. Like, it doesn't hit the same way.
Yeah.
I think that's one thing that was difficult in season 9. I think it is funny to contrast the way that Dwight walks up to him and he puts his finger on Jim's lips. And then you compare that to the way that Nellie does the same thing for Toby at the end of the episode.
I mean, she kisses Toby just to get the out of there. What a terrible decision.
So weird. Weird ending.
The way that Toby responds to being asked to talk about, to finally,
he's like, yeah,
finally gets a little bit of attention. You know,
I could talk about it. I could tell you.
And Stanley walks out the room. See you next Christmas.
Just one by one, people are leaving the room. And Nelly just doesn't even notice.
I know.
And then the way that Toby takes off his glasses dramatically after that first kiss.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh. Amazing stuff. And that's and then the episode over. Boom. It's like a Toby Nelly cliffhanger. It's bizarre. Mm-hmm. Very bizarre. But it is season 9. We shouldn't be surprised.
Mm-hmm.
It is funny how when they brought out the Christmas decorations, it suddenly felt like we're back in the office on a Christmas episode.
And, mm-hmm. Yes, totally. And then actually the shot they chose to end it before the tag at the end, before the Nelly Toby scene, is a slow pan out of everyone in the conference room having a good time. Mm-hmm. And again, that doesn't feel like a normal ending. That feels like we're back at the Dundies, right? Where they end the episode with Jim and Pam listening to music and it kind of fades out.
Although every good Christmas party ends in the bullpen.
True. Right. Right. Okay. Drunken karaoke somewhere. But
so I was a little disappointed that they were all huddled in the conference.
Yeah.
Room.
And I get that it does feel a little corny and that it doesn't feel like DNA of the office to do that. But I get that the season 9, it's all about the ensemble. Right. And there is this moment to like, pan out and literally everyone's in the same room. Like there's not a side party. There's not someone unhappy in the corner. Like everyone's there except Toby and Nelly making out. But like otherwise that's how they choose to end the episode. And that's what season 9 is like all about, is them just, here's the ensemble doing their thing. There you go.
Well, and I mean, this is probably a bigger conversation for our inevitable or eventual season 9 episode, but in the Andy Green book, they talk about going into that season, not sure if they're going to reboot or if this is going to be the last season and how they deal with that. And I think when they made that decision to make this the last season, they had so much to get to that a lot of the episodes don't have the same like breathing room that maybe an episode in season 5 or 6 might have had, where there is some plot stuff to resolve. but you can have a Christmas episode with a moment like I'm thinking of when Angela's trying to throw the tablecloth on and no one's helping her. It's like those moments are harder to find in season 9 because they have so much to get to.
Yeah.
See, but that's a huge problem for me though, Edwin. That's exactly why I fell in love with the show. That they take a moment to take this expensive time on television. You know what I mean? Like that, those, like they measure this stuff by like the second, like when you're on Thursday night comedy on NBC. And it's like, it's just going to be an actress like flipping a tablecloth for a few seconds. And you get to season 9 where it's just like, pack it in, pack it in, pack it in. Have all these, we got to have all these storylines. We got to have something for everyone, something for everyone. Let's what are they doing over there? Like, it's just like, it really got away. And I'll say this too, that it really got away from all the other Christmas episodes being about what everyone experiences it when they have an office Christmas party and stuff like that, to being about these characters in this very specific situation. So like, and again, I'm sorry, I'm being hard on this episode because it's season 9 and I just, you know,
no, it's true. I mean, when you look at this episode, what's structurally within the season, the most important parts of this episode as a Christmas episode plot wise are two things I would say, which is one, introduce Pete and Aaron and get that couple going. And two, establish that Daryl's going to go to Philadelphia, right? Those are the two main plot things that this episode does for season 9, I would say, right? I guess Toby having a crush on Nellie, but whatever, who cares?
Which goes nowhere, so.
Right, exactly. So it's like, that's ultimately what they had to do with this episode. And they dressed it up a lot with, you know, in twigs and burlap.
I mean, the other big plot thing for me is that they identified the spoon that guided Dwight's head through Dwight's the birthing skull. Canal. That would be the other thing. But no, I agree with you. I think I think the episode suffers for that. And it's true of a lot of episodes in season 9, but it's just something I wanted to mention, you know?
Sure.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Anything else about this episode?
Hot takes for this episode for me were...
come the hot takes?
No, I've said it all before, but it's just that, I mean, number one, thank God for Rainn Wilson in season 9. He is carrying the show. He carries this episode.
100%.
Every character has kind of shifted away from what I like about them, except for Dwight at this point.
It just made me think of this, just one thing about this, a moment that made me laugh that had made me laugh before this episode is the scene when Jim and Dwight break the pig rib and the amount of juice that comes out and sprays over
I was
people.
Gonna mention that too.
It is such a funny amount of fluid that is spraying it's nasty over everybody.
And nobody wiped it off apparently. It's like still on Phyllis's face when they're in the conference room.
I thought that was a really good touch.
It's so gross. and just that Jim is really awful in this episode. I really, really don't like him. He's so cocky and ignorant of how people are feeling around him, and he ruins everyone in the office. Just wanted a regular Christmas party. They were all ready to vote on that, and he used Pam's manipulation skills to get this Dwight Christmas that he leaves halfway through. Okay, so I'm just saying, not a good episode for Jim.
He's being a real mop handle.
Closing thoughts, Edwin.
I was gonna go over the gifts that he is now, but I do like that everyone wants to keep the bowls. I think that's funny. You can't keep the bowls.
We covered so much of it. I think it's great to see Dwight as Belschnickel. He does carry the episode in the same way that he carries so much of the rest of season 9. And it is very interesting to watch this in context of the rest of the season and how it's part of this puzzle piece that gets them to the finale with all these plot things that they have to walk through to get there.
Yeah.
But Dwight as Belschnickel is an enduring image of the office. And I will say too, like one of the things we're going to talk about picks later in the episode, but one thing I love to do around Christmas is watch all the Christmas episodes from different shows that I love. And within the episode, within the Office Christmas episodes, this one is different, which I kind of like if you're just going to chop up the show that way.
Mm. Yeah, it's a good call. Good call.
Yeah.
All right. Time for a conference room. 5 minutes.
All right. Everybody in the conference room. I don't care if you are gay or straight or a lesbian or overweight. Just get in here right now.
All right. So for this week's conference room, it's Christmas time, 2020. We just want to talk about everyone's home for Christmas break, probably. And so what are some things that you guys are watching this Christmas break, whether that be Christmas content that you're watching or listening to, or just stuff from this year that you'd recommend for other folks? What are your picks?
I've got some podcasts. I got something to watch and something to read. Which of those do you want first, Sean?
I wanna hear the, let's get the reading out of the way.
This was something that we read in a book club that I was part of this year. It's a book called The Last Days of Night by Graham Moore. It's not a dense book. It's not an exceptional. It's not like a.
You're really selling it.
I know. It's not. It's not this like crazy amazing book, but it is a very enjoyable read. In the same way, it's like a big popcorn movie. This is that for a book that's just like easy to read. There's no fat on this book. It just moves, and it's the story essentially of like. Of Edison versus Tesla and versus George Westinghouse. So it's like late 1800s, the electricity wars, and told from the perspective of George Westinghouse's lawyer who is suing Edison, which sounds boring, but it's not.
I love that drunk history about Tesla and Edison.
Yes.
With John C. Reilly. Is it like that?
Exactly.
Okay, good.
No, but it's a really fun read. It moves super fast. Like you could probably check this book out or buy it and read it before the end of the year. Like it's a quick
nice
read. If you're on if you're on Christmas vacation and just want to plow through a book like that, it's really fun. It's great characters, and it's like reading a movie. It's good.
Nice. Well, what are you watching?
Oh, you want me to go again?
Yeah,
go again.
Well, okay. I watched the Heaven's Gate doc on HBO.
What? Oh, shoot. I didn't know that there was a Heaven's Gate doc on HBO.
It's called Heaven's Gate: The Cult of Cults.
And four-parter. Okay.
If you like cults, you're gonna like it.
And I do, and I will.
Yet another cult that started in Oregon. People just love starting cults here in our fair state.
It's a
and I would say that I don't know. There's a lot in it that blows my mind, but T and Doe, who are the leaders, Doe, who's the guy, is like first round number one draft pick cult leader type. Like he is incredible. As dark as all this is, there's a level of commitment to this cult that is like astounding, and I kind of respect it. Even though what happened is horrific, it's also like kind of blows me away.
I've listened to the last podcast on the left about it.
Nice. And
it's a great story.
Well, enjoy that documentary series, will you? And then the other a movie that just came on Netflix is Frost Nixon. If you guys haven't seen that, it's fantastic.
I haven't seen it, but I
saw it when it first came out and loved it. And they just put on Netflix, and it's like a movie I feel like a lot of people should see. And it's just about a journalist who interviewed Richard Nixon, gave his first public interview after resigning from the presidency. And it was a big media event, and it's sort of the story behind all that. And the acting's awesome. Writing's great. It's just a great movie.
Did John Krasinski play Nixon in that movie? No. He's just very Nixon-y in the morning.
That's right.
Yes. Absolutely.
Oh, good.
It's great.
What about you, Edwin? What you got? What are your Christmas picks?
I started watching this the other day. I'm not done with it yet, but I've loved it all the way through. It's Ted Lasso.
Oh, nice.
It's on Apple TV. Jason, what's
Jason
his name?
Jason
Sudeikis.
Yeah, so it's based off these commercials that NBC made a few years ago. But basically, the premise is an American football coach gets hired as an English Premier League team coach or a manager, I should say, for this fictional club in the EPL, and it's that story of him going over there, and it's really good. It's kind of hard to encapsulate, but like it gets better as it goes, and it's. The character is kind of this relentless optimist, which is really nice against kind of these British sensibilities that they play for humor quite a bit, which is pretty good. And he's got a lot of folksy sayings. It's just really, really good. I highly recommend it.
Awesome. Yeah, I gotta check that out.
Yeah.
I gotta get Apple TV. Yeah.
It's on Apple TV, which is the thing.
Interesting. Here we go.
Yeah.
Apple TV, Peacock. We got new Peacock, streaming services, and
I just got CBS All Access, so I could watch Are You the One.
Let me think. Other things. I mean, the other thing that I've been doing this season is watching Christmas episodes of different TV shows that I love.
That's good.
I highly recommend that. It's just kind of a way to chop up shows that you haven't seen in a while, like. I feel like I've talked about Bob's Burgers quite a bit, but that's a show where you can stack the Christmas episodes and they're really fun to watch back to back.
Because it's such a sweet show at heart. Like it has such a good, that's a great one.
Yeah. And the other thing, I guess the thing that I'm reading right now, this is going to sound super nerdy, but then again, so does our podcast. I'm reading Jonathan Hickman, who is a comic book writer, his run on like X-Men. House of X and Powers of X came out last year, but I like to let that stuff, I like to be behind so that I don't have to wait for new issues to come out. I can just kind of read it all in one go. But that's really great if you like Marvel Comics.
Nice, nice. Great picks. For my Christmas watch list, we just watched Muppet Christmas Carol the other day. That's a movie from my childhood that I hadn't watched in like over a decade. And you know what? It holds up.
I'm gonna
recommend that one.
That's an annual. I watch that every year with my family.
Oh my god! Well, now I'm going to because I hadn't seen it in years, and I was it's still
great,
good.
Man.
Michael Caine is Ebenezer Scrooge. That's brilliant.
Yeah. On a recent All Fantasy Everything shout out to their pod. We mentioned them a lot, but they made a point which made me laugh so hard, which is I can't believe it took me this long to realize that. One of the Marley brothers is named Robert Marley, aka Bob Marley, and no one ever noticed that. Like this whole time, he's been named Robert Marley in that story.
Marley and Marley. Ooh. All right. Another fun Christmas thing to watch is the Kacey Musgraves Christmas special. There's a lot
of
incredible people.
Just at our friend Matt's house today, and that was what was paused on the screen.
Oh, nice.
Matt loves Kacey Musgraves.
Oh, I think
I was so not surprised. I was so
I've seen Ryan and I have seen her live. We've got one of the albums on vinyl, Golden Hour. I think that's it. So anyway, she's great. She's got a great Christmas special. Dan Levy is narrating, and there's a lot of amazing people. Zooey Deschanel, Lana Del Rey, and Leon Bridges.
Ooh.
A lot of great people on that.
Awesome.
So that's just a fun one. You turn it on, walk away. James Gordon. Elf,
you know what?
Obviously.
Oh yeah. Oh, sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt. Go ahead. Keep going.
Go ahead. Or what are you going to make?
Oh, just, an office themed pick is the Andy Green book, The Office, The Untold Story.
Mm.
If you haven't read that book, I highly recommend it. Came out in March and we've talked about it. We reference it from time to time. I brought it up here, but I will admit that I'm kind of guilty of, instead of reading it through in one go, I'll kind of use it to kind of help us prep. And kind of cherry pick different chapters and sections and stuff. But reading the season 9 chapter today to kind of help get ready for this episode, made me realize that I need to just sit down and read it all the way through, even though I've read the large majority of it in chunks. But anyway, it's a great gift. I think you could learn a lot about The Office from it. Like, it's so interesting to hear the different perspectives of different writers and actors and how they perceive different events and dynamics differently, which is pretty cool. But anyway, that's an office themed recommendation.
That's a great one. Great one. Yeah.
Talk about Elf.
No. I was just, if you haven't seen Elf, you got to watch it. Okay.
Done.
Time for some trivia.
Yeah.
Trivia.
All right. Let's just do our thing, collect our hardware, and get the hell home.
This trivia comes to us from Scott. Dear Sean Roney, Edwin James, and as always, your producer in the warehouse, Mr. Alex Ward. I am Scott, and I live in California. I'm a big fan of your podcast and have listened to nearly every episode. Here's some trivia that I created. I tried to make it as difficult as possible by including visual trivia, as well as trivia from Scott's Tots, since I know that many people do not rewatch that episode due to its high level of cringe. Really hope you enjoy. Okay, here we go. Question one. What meals do Kevin and Pam eat together while Pam is pregnant in the delivery, part one?
I feel like we talked about this on a recent episode, but Ratatouille from Ratatouille.
What are the, meals?
You mean they have, like, second lunch, first dinner?
Yes.
And first lunch, second lunch, and first dinner?
Right. They have a schedule.
Is that it?
And it's second breakfast, lunch, second lunch, and first dinner.
Oh, okay.
I missed the breakfast.
But that was the answer, right? Like, we didn't.
Yes. Okay.
Edwards Cornflake Chicken from the Twilight Cookbook.
Yeah. What are the four kinds of business, according to Michael Scott, in his lecture in the episode Business School?
Okay, sales is one.
Railroad?
Yes.
Railroads, rather.
Yes.
Airplanes?
Yes.
Or no, is it travel?
Air travel, yes.
Air travel. Yeah.
I'll give you that.
And food. Food?
Food service, yes.
That's four.
And, that's four. And then there's, he gave you, he said guess four of the seven, I guess, is what he said. So there's also
what are the tourism. Rest of them? Okay.
Oh, okay.
And hospitals/manufacturing.
Yeah. Okay, that's great.
Okay, all right. How many times has Michael's meeting with the Scott's Tots been rescheduled?
Nine?
Seven times. Okay. What are the mnemonic devices that Michael comes up with for the people at his lecture at the Utica branch?
Oh, boy.
From lecture circuit part one.
These are the names that he gives?
Yes. There are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 names.
Katie Lang.
No.
Baldy?
Okay.
Baldy is one.
Lazy Eye.
Yes.
Sugar Boobs.
Yes.
Beardy.
No.
Isn't one close. Just Mexico?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's four.
glasses?
So bad, dude.
No.
No.
Is there a shirty? It's like pimple or mole or something.
Mole,
and black woman.
Okay.
Oh yeah.
What are the paintings that Pam painted at the art show of business school?
A stapler.
Yes.
The building.
Yes.
I think there's a pot of flowers or like some still life of flowers.
Yes, vase of flowers, yes.
Fruit of some kind?
There's grapes in a bowl.
Okay, yeah.
Motel art.
Yeah.
And then we've got an orange mug of tea. And the brick building, a brick building that resembles the building in the opening credits.
Okay.
Oh. Okay.
That's another non-musical earworm, by the way, when Gil says motel art. Whenever I'm at a hotel and I see art, I hear that in my head, just in motel art. Disdain.
I've got about five more questions here.
Okay.
When Andy cannot remember the lyrics to the Kit Kat commercial jingle in local ad, what are all the things he tries to replace with Kit Kat bar in the lyrics?
Football cream. That's it. Football cream.
Football cream.
Applesauce.
Chrysler car.
Fancy feast.
There's more? I thought that was it.
Fancy feast.
Okay, I don't know. Maybe, perhaps these are some deleted scenes, but I'll read you the ones that you
have. Yeah.
Lumber tar.
Oh, okay.
Snickers bar.
He does it like under his breath. Snickers bar. Yeah.
Gray Poupon,
yeah, for sure.
Claude Van Damme. Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah.
Hair for men.
Yeah.
Poison gas.
Yeah.
And NutraSweet.
Okay.
There's way more than I thought. I thought it was like four.
So many. Never would have gotten.
Well, like there's that. So he's like in the conference room doing it, and Jim says, "Nobody tell him."
Yep.
Yeah.
And then when he says football cream, Michael says, "That's it. It's football cream. Yeah. And they move on. And then there's another scene where he's saying it to himself. And then at the end, the tag of the episode, he also does it.
Okay.
Fancy feast. Yeah.
What are all the names of Scott's tots that are said aloud?
Michaela Laster.
Yeah.
I'm someone's brother. Oh my gosh. Isaiah?
Zion is Michaela's brother.
Okay, Zion is Michaela's brother. Isaiah is not one.
Is there a Nick?
I'm going to read them for you because you're so close. Derek, LaFarve, Ben, Ayana, Michaela, Nikki, Jason, and Zion, Michaela's brother.
Okay.
When Andy and Pam go on a sales call in Koi Pond, Andy sings a song about the various businesses in the office complex. What are the three businesses he names in their sweet
Apple Bomb Drilling.
Sweet 401.
Yes.
Sweet 202.
There's the rugs. Something rugs.
We got Sherman Blinds and Rugs, Suite 202.
Sherman Blinds and Rugs, Suite 202. Apple Bottom Drilling. Suite 401.
Yeah.
Suite Doobity Doo.
That's like holding in a sneeze.
And the first one.
What is it?
Dean's Trophy is in Suite
100. That's a great trivia question. That's really good. Good trivia question.
We got two more here. Right after Dwight gives birth to a watermelon, we see him pulling up his pants next to Michael's desk during a talking head of Michael's. What color are his boxers?
Green.
I was going to say red.
Maroon. So I'm going to give that one to Alex.
Combine red and green. What do you get? I don't know.
Brown. Not maroon.
Spicy brown. Yeah.
Okay. Final question.
Yeah.
All right. And I'm going to be shocked if any of you get this because really this is a deep. Okay. What is the name of the character who is listed as playing boy in bar in Threat Level Midnight? They named this kid on IMDb.
Oh.
So you don't know.
It's not that I watched The Office. I would have to go on IMDb and figure it out. Yeah.
Timmy?
No, thanks.
But I'll give you a second to guess.
Timmy?
John.
No. No!
Terry.
Michael?
Guys, no.
Luke.
It's all right.
Is it Luke?
It's Owen Winkdale. Owen Winkdale. And this is just...
Okay.
On IMDb. So there you go. There's a little fun fact for you. And thank you, Scott, to making that trivia.
Yeah.
You can send us trivia.
Great Scott.
You can send us trivia by emailing us, mspodcastcompany@gmail.com. It's great to say that it's trivia in the subject line, and we will play it on the show. Call us, 503-694-9314. Leave us a message. We love to play those on the show. We're on Facebook and Instagram, Michael Scott Podcast Company. We have a website, michaelscottpod.com. We're on Patreon, patreon.com/michaelscott. $5 a month. You can become a Scott's Tot. You can get bonus content every month. We do our own mailbags on there.
We're recording this Tuesday. We just dropped one today. So you
just dropped
Scott's
one.
Tots. You're getting two episodes this week just for you in the Christmas break to get you through.
And we're going to be, so join us on there. It supports the show. We do a donation together to the Thurgood Marshall College Fund. It's a great thing. Join us on there.
Great. Whoops. Team.
special thanks. very special thanks to all of our Scott's Tots for supporting the show. You guys make this thing happen. And special thanks to Ryan Lloyd, who helps us with our social media and designs our artwork. This episode was recorded in Portland, Oregon over video chat.
Thank you for listening. As always, we say it every week, but it's easy when you mean it. I think at the end of the year, I just hope everyone has a great Christmas, happy holidays, and we'll see you all. Take care. Stay safe. We'll see you next week.
Pippity Poppy, give me this up.
Yes, sir. Da-da.
Wait. Don't skip ahead just yet. I know you were about to. Chances are, if you're listening to this podcast, then you'll love mine too. If you like podcasts that break down all of your favorite water cooler reality TV shows like The Real Housewives or big budget movies like Wakanda Forever, then this is the podcast for you. Subscribe to my podcast, Reality and Comics 2, and listen to episodes like my interview with Robin Dixon of The Real Housewives of Potomac or my interviews with your favorite bombshells from Love Island USA. That's Reality and Comics 2. And I'm Kendrick. See you there.